And welcome everybody to Keyword Crypto. This is Michael. I got Patrick Lubris with me. He's not from the Nano Foundation, but everybody is pinging him lately to ask him for advice and to get his feedback that he probably should start working for them. Hey Patrick, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So how many podcasts have you been on at this point?
Oh man, too many. But not really. It hasn't been that bad, if I'm honest.
I mean, it's good though. I mean, it should make you feel good. I mean, at one point you were like, you said you're an introvert, and I'm like, too bad, dude. Sorry.
Yeah, man. I am a hardcore introvert, but this is not my life this week, I guess.
Yeah. So I wanted to have you on because a couple of people were pinging me saying they can't wait to hear the next episode. Where I explain what happened, and I'm like, I don't know what happened, dude. I'm just a passive investor who, you know, has a passing interest in Nano. And if it were all to collapse tomorrow, I'd just move on to the next thing, which I'm pretty open about. So that's when people call me a shill, you know, I'm like, I guess I'm just, so far it works and no one's been able to show me that it doesn't work. And then on the Nano Reddit, someone was like, "Well, you know, here's a perfect example. It got hit once and it totally went offline." I was like, "Did it go offline? Did I miss something?" So I wanted to why don't you explain what happened?
Yeah, let's get into it. So about 2 weeks ago, I think Nano started seeing some spam transactions at like twice the normal transaction rate. So normal or more than twice, normal transaction rate is like 1 to 2 confirmations per second, right? Pretty little in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. I think at the beginning of March, we started seeing 20, 25 just consistently flat out for days. That spiked to 40, then 50, then 60, then 75. Then at some points, there were spikes to 100, 200, or 300, which could have just been bootstrapping. It's hard to know on that because of the way the metrics are collected, but
what's bootstrapping really fast?
And bootstrapping is when a node is trying to connect to the Nano network. They're trying to sync up their ledger so that they're on the same state as everyone else.
Okay.
And so in some cases, if there's like a brand new node bootstrapping or connecting to the network to get up to date, to get the ledger, in some stat trackers that might spike the transactions per second or confirmations per second, when really it's not technically or really increasing the transactions on the network. It just looks like that because of the way the stats are collected.
Okay.
But anyways, so Nano was then being hit at 60, 75 consistent transactions per second for a week and a half or so, a week, something like that. And the network as a whole was processing transactions just fine. The high-end nodes and the majority of vote weight, which is what you need for consensus, right? You need over 50% of voting participants voting for a transaction to be confirmed. There was enough vote weight that transactions were still being confirmed at that rate. The spam transactions were being confirmed just fine. Regular transactions were being confirmed just fine. Where things started to fall apart is that lower-end nodes started getting desynced, right? So a lot of people run hobby nodes and even some not necessarily hobby nodes, but maybe entry-level business nodes, if we can put it that way, started falling behind. And unfortunately, a lot of those nodes were some of the key services on the Nano network. So like some wallets, some exchanges, and that's where people first really started to notice transaction issues where they're like, hey, where's my transaction? I sent out a transaction. I don't see anything. While at the same time, they're not seeing anything. If you go check the block explorers or you go check other nodes, the transactions broadcast and confirm still in less than 1 second, no problem. So those issues started to compound, and a number of the top representatives, those high-end nodes that weren't having issues, said, hey, we got to do something about this. And so they all locally on their end implemented bandwidth limits, which is essentially a more decentralized equivalent of the Bitcoin block size, right? If enough people all limit their bandwidth to whatever, it decreases the network's throughput. So that's essentially what happened. Enough of the vote weight on the network, all on their own nodes, set those bandwidth limits much lower, which dropped network throughput to, around 15 confirmations per second, which really slowed down the rate of the spammer transactions and ledger growth a little bit, not really, because I think unconfirmed transactions at this moment still get written to the ledger, but we can come back to that. But anyways, it limited the impact of the spam and allowed some of those weaker nodes to start catching up, because now the network is only confirming at 15 transactions per second or so average. But then, of course, that once you've limited the network like that, that causes the proof of work requirements to increase. For anyone who's not familiar, Nano, instead of a transaction fee, uses proof of work for every transaction to fight spam and to prioritize transactions. So when the network is saturated or at its limit, in this case it was, because the spammer is even still right now, they're broadcasting at 20 to 25 transactions per second, and the network is capped at 15-ish, it causes the proof of work requirements to go up. So if you want to be prioritized in front of the line before the spam, you have to do more proof of work than normal. And that's where another issue is coming into play, where a lot of services are not properly doing that proof of work multiplier. They're still sending at maybe that base level of proof of work, which makes it harder for transactions to get processed and prioritized. And then at the same time, because there's a bunch of nodes all bootstrapping that fell behind those lower end nodes, there's some sync issues, right? Where on one node, the node is behind, or they've synced a different chain potentially. Not a different chain in the Bitcoin sense, where you're like two separate forks, but a different account chain in Nano. So like for maybe a simple example, your account chain is synced on the Natrium wallet node, but not mine. And then on Binance's node, my account chain is synced because that's the transactions they saw and not yours. And that is also going on with the network, causing some additional issues. So yeah, it's been a crazy week.
So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, is Nano like down? Because I keep hearing like Nano's down. Is it actually?
No. Nano, the network, is not down. The consensus never stopped. There was enough vote weight and enough nodes that are still up and processing transactions that transactions are still getting processed. The network hasn't stalled or anything like that. It is down in the sense for some people who are maybe using a wallet or an exchange with a node that's out of sync, they're having issues with transactions. And that is a legitimate concern, because there's a lot of people that use Natrium, for example, or WeNano. WeNano is doing pretty good, but any of those wallets or services that get out of sync, and for them, the experience is, whoa, where's my transaction? It's been seconds, minutes, hours, and in some cases, 24 hours. And like, hey, what the hell happened? Have I lost my money?
So is that
the big picture network, it's not down.
Okay. So is that something that where somebody could just change their representative and have things?
No, it wouldn't be changing the representative. You'd have to change your node. And most people, they don't even know or care about their node. They use whatever their wallet is connected to. But if you're running your own node and it's still synced, you could use that. I think Nalt, another popular wallet, lets you. It actually cycles through multiple nodes, but you can also choose your own node and reference that if you want.
So something like Nalt seems a little more robust from a technology standpoint than something like Natrium. Natrium seems kind of like fast cash type.
Yes and no. Natrium is pretty solid generally, and even still now they're doing really good stuff, but they're definitely targeted toward like the, I want to say, I guess, more casual audience. It's really trying to compete with a Zelle, Venmo type of experience. Someone who almost doesn't even know or care about crypto, right? They want it to be as simple and as easy as possible. Yeah. So they don't give you all that granular level of control, which most of the time works just fine. And in the future, I imagine they will iron out any of the kinks. They will do prioritization and proof of work multipliers, which they do to some extent already. So not to say that Natrium is completely broken or it's their fault. It's definitely not, but there's just so many different variables coming into play. It's hard to make a definitive statement.
I mean, in your mind, are you worried in any way about Nano's future or Nano's ability to handle this in the future, or because no, I guess my really. Main question is, what's if somebody has an unlimited amount of money for electricity, yep. what's to stop them from increasing their proof of work multiplier to continue spam attacking and to not get yep. people, not let people, jump to the front of the line?
Yeah. So big picture, I'm not really concerned about Nano. These kind of issues are known and expected, and it's happened to Bitcoin as well. And the network is still functioning, and there's a lot of both research and active development happening that will mitigate spam in many different ways. As far as the other part of your question, I just completely blanked. can you repeat the last part of your question
about
letting, again?
about a spammer deciding to spend unlimited amount of money for electricity to increase their proof of work multiplier.
Yeah, thank you. So a spammer could, with enough hardware and enough resources, if they have unlimited funds, anything's attackable. Anything, you can commit a denial of service attack against it. Even Google, Amazon, Facebook, Akamai, Fastly, all these big network operators, in theory and actually in reality, can be DDoSed to some extent. But the counter to the scenario you're talking about is that the spammer has to do the increased proof of work at the capacity of the network. So whereas an individual user is just doing one onesie, twosie transactions, and they can easily do 2, 5, or 10 times the amount of proof of work without really impacting their flow, a spammer has to do 2, 5, or 10 times the proof of work for all of their transactions at the maximum throughput of the network. So in this case, if the network is limited to around 15 confirmations per second, they have to do 15 confirmations per second for millions of transactions over the whole duration that they want to cause impact. And then still a normal user can do just a little bit more proof of work, which is fine for them because they're only doing onesie, twosie transactions, and get moved to the front of the line, assuming prioritization and the multipliers are working correctly and as expected.
How much do you think the spammer is, how much money do you think this is costing the spammer to do a 2-week attack like this?
To be honest, right now, probably not much. I think there's some existing spam scripts that anyone can run. And if you rent a graphics card from, I think someone called, there's like Zen.ai or something like that, some service, right? There's probably multiple services where you can rent GPU power and attach it to your project. Probably not that much. I want to say in the hundreds per month range, maybe at this consistent rate. Now, probably potentially a lot more as the proof of work multiplier kicks in. But in the big scheme of things, it's not that much, especially if you're talking about from like a Bitcoiner's perspective, or someone has like a large GPU farm and or it's a nation state wanting to cause serious harm. They could spam for minimal out of pocket to them outside of like electricity cost, right?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that, I don't even know how to hypothesize who's doing it or why, but I have so many ideas of like, maybe it's an angry Bitcoiner who the Nano reply guy is just pissed off one too many times, or maybe it's Coinbase, saying like, okay, we're finally going to look at this, we're going to attack it and see how robust it is. Or maybe it's, it could be anything. It could be anybody. It could be a Wall Street
person. It could
person.
Be completely legitimate people.
That's
one of the reasons I won't really speculate, because we can't really know. But I personally, I think this should be known, and it is and was known and is expected for any kind of open network, right? People, for good reasons or bad reasons, will attack networks all the time. And Nano is aware of that, and it's designed to work around that. I struggle to answer sometimes when people ask me, can spam be solved? It really depends on your definition of solve, right? Because there's in almost every scenario, you can come up with a way to use more resources than are available. But what matters is graceful recovery and the ability for legitimate participants to still be able to get a decent quality of service, right? Everyone is using the internet all the time with DDoS attackers and spam at the same time. And for the most part, they're not too affected, except for maybe in some rare cases with specific services. But even then, the networks or service typically recover pretty quickly, and or people can do a little bit more work or pay a higher fee or use a different node and still be able to use that service, right? So in my mind, the end state of Nano is to be able to function perfectly fine with these kinds of high-end spam attacks happening all the time. Because users can just do a little bit of proof of work, it works flawlessly because the multiplier is working as expected, the prioritization is working as expected, they get moved to the front of the line, and that kind of kills a lot of the incentive for the spammer, right? Because they're not really impacting the network or users, so what's the point? That's a disincentive to spam. Yeah. I guess the spammer could be trying to spam to centralize the network, right? To bloat the ledger. But even as is at 70 TPS or CPS, the ledger growth rate, sure, it shuts out low-end nodes and hobbyist nodes, especially without pruning. But the high-end businesses and services being developed on Nano are still able to run nodes with no issue. I mean, you can buy a terabyte of storage for $100, which is at 70 TPS, that's, I want to say, months of, or maybe even a year plus of spamming straight to fill up a terabyte. There's a calculator. I don't know the math off the top of my head, so don't quote me on that. But okay. I want to say it's something in that range. So I'm not too concerned big picture, long term. And I think the network is handling decently well, but there's also a lot of real world impact to real people right now.
Yeah.
Through either a combination of service issues or implementation issues or desyncing, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like some people are you know, doom scrolling about this and getting really down on Nano. And I guess I'm looking at it from a technology standpoint of this is still nascent technology. And when I was saying on Twitter, it's like, this is good for Nano. This means that Nano is actually getting on someone's radar enough where they want to spend this amount of money and time trying to spam the network and trying to shut it down. That means that people are now becoming aware of it, and either they're testing it out to invest in it, or they're scared and they're trying to shut it down. Like,
yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's fair.
And so I guess I don't want to minimize it, because like you said, it has real world effects on, maybe it's somebody in some small country that is actually trying to use this as a, you know, for their business or something like that, and it gets shut down because they're not attached to a, you know, a high end business node or something like that. You know, like there's always going to be real world effects, and so I wasn't trying to minimize it in that sense. But anybody who's jumping onto nascent technology, you know, I used to joke around that it's still kind of in beta, but it's not. Obviously, it's not in beta, but like it's still early. You know, like Gmail still gets shut down every once in a while. That's been around for almost 20 years now. So it's just like we still have to. I get frustrated when like my mom calls me and say, my computer's not working. I said, well, did you restart it and start it? Oh, okay, it works now. And I'm like, it's this idea that like we should have flying cars by now, when in reality, like technology still is. I mean, this stuff has only been around for like 30 years, the infrastructure, 40 years.
Yep.
And so stuff is still going to go down. We're using, you know, like America's is very, I think it's pretty well known around the world how poorly we've invested in our infrastructure for the last 50 years, meaning we have.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So everything's, all our bridges are crumbling. You know, a huge portion of our population doesn't have, you know, broadband. So it's like we're still using a lot of old technology to get this stuff done. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as things start to progress, how Nano holds up, because you said that it was handling up to like 100 transactions per second at one point by the spammer, right?
Yeah. And in previous stress tests, we've seen 240 plus on the mainnet for shorter duration, of course, but the issue here again was the lower end nodes, and unfortunately some of those nodes were services that are very popular and well used that got behind. And not to say that the Nano protocol was perfect either. There were some compounding issues, like a high amount of bandwidth used in certain scenarios, or like a compounding effect when some nodes get out of sync and then more nodes get out of sync, causing more nodes to get out of sync because more traffic's going back and forth. And a lot of those issues have been known for a long time and are being worked on. That's one of the things that frustrates me a little bit, is that a lot of people are saying, like, Nano should have expected this, and why was this not solved already? Why did the network have any issues at all, when a lot of this was known? A lot of the fixes, or I guess improvements, were already underway and are underway, and more will be coming. Sure, that this there's maybe like one or two brand new findings. Like, I think one of them had to do with unlimited frontiers, or basically account end blocks, because the spammer was spamming to a bunch of new accounts instead of existing accounts. One of the issues that the node has is that on startup, it does a scan across all those frontiers, all those accounts. And because of this like 5x or 10x in frontiers, it started having performance issues, right? So now one of the fixes is to bound that scanning to a smaller subset on startup. And that's one of the fixes. But it's things like that where a lot of users, or maybe casual observers, they think that a cryptocurrency is perfect from day one. Yeah. But they miss a lot of the work that has been going on and is going on and should be going on. Even in Bitcoin, not to say, oh, but what about Bitcoin? But
yeah,
a lot of people that are in Bitcoin these days don't remember all the same challenges that Bitcoin had. Bitcoin had 6-hour plus reorganizations of the blockchain. Bitcoin has had spam attacks that acted as denial of service to the network. Bitcoin has experienced a lot of these things, and a lot inflation of those are attacks and issues. Yeah, inflation bugs. All those things are what make Bitcoin stronger, right? And I view Nano the same way. I see nothing that has invalidated the core properties or the core design thesis of Nano, right? The design at a high level still makes sense. It still works. It doesn't seem like there's anything obviously wrong or obviously unfixable, but there are implementation issues. There are service improvement opportunities. There's a lot of things that need to be done. And of course, one of the challenges that Nano has specifically is that it's a nonprofit organization. It has a relatively small developer fund compared to most other cryptocurrencies. It also has a relatively small community, a developer base, right? There's maybe 10 Nano Foundation participants, and not all of those, or even most of those, are developers.
And so, it's also coming off of Nano's version of Mt. Gox, where through no fault of their own, they have to expend all this money and all this energy trying to deal with Bomber, who was, if you don't know, he was the owner of BitGrail, who, you know, it's just like they have that. They're just coming off the tail end of that. And then, it's not about whataboutism when talking about Bitcoin. So what's the average Bitcoin transaction per second?
I think it's capped at about 7, right? 7 okay. transactions per second.
So even during
In the degraded state, we're doing twice what Bitcoin is doing.
Yeah. And then, you know, when Ethereum's dealing with $50 to $100 transaction fees right now, sometimes up in the thousands, depending on what service you're trying to use it for. This isn't about whataboutism. It's about comparing and keeping things perspective. Yeah, it's just perspective. It's like these are things that are working side by side, and I'm not saying like what about this. I'm saying like how is this in perspective to Bitcoin? How is this in perspective to Ethereum? Like, what's going on? How is the team handling it? And so, like, people were getting so down on it. I'm like, obviously, these people aren't paying attention to Ethereum, to Bitcoin. I mean, Ethereum miners just publicly announced they're going to 51% attack the Ethereum chain. So all cryptos have their own issues going on at any given time, right? So, but if you're not paying attention to the news about Ethereum, that's not even going to be on your radar. You know, so it's just like there's always something going on. There's always like as we get more involved and more people, you know, this gets on more and more people's radars, more and more people, nation states, like you said, they're going to start attacking these networks, you know, relentlessly.
Yep, for sure.
Trying to either shut them down or trying to get some money out of it. That's the thing about crypto, about Nano, is you can't really make any money out of it, can you? By spamming the network?
I mean, in theory, if you find like a zero-day vulnerability that there's like an inflation bug or something that allows you to double spend, then you could make money that way. Or if you're able to steal people's funds or there's a bug in seed generation and it's insecure and you take people's money that way. But that applies to pretty much all cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. So there isn't anything like specific to Nano that people should be worrying about, or is there?
No, not to my knowledge. Okay. I mean, if there was, that would be a serious issue. If there's a way to actively double spend or steal people's funds, but there's no reports of funds lost. There's no reports of double spending. There's none of those like integrity of funds issues, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. So, but and my response to that is like Bitcoin's had three of those. I think three inflation bugs that they've found over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, I think. They've had double spends, very small, but like that, this is part of being an early adopter of something. You're gonna find these things. And the Bitcoin team jumped on it quick, fixed it, you know, made the changes. That's how, when people, so like when I talk shit about Bitcoin, on this show I'm notorious about talking shit about Bitcoin. I'm talking shit about the technology. I'm not talking shit about the development team. Those guys work hard.
Yeah.
Guys and girls work hard. You know, they jump on fixes right away. They're a solid team. I just feel like the actual code of Bitcoin has limitations on its ability to scale. And that's why I was looking around at other things. But the team itself is pretty strong. But they're also hamstrung by miners saying, you know, we don't want to change the code. We don't want to change this. We don't want to change that. We don't want to go to bigger blocks or smaller blocks or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like there's so many things. And Ethereum is facing the same issues. So like that's why I was looking at Nano. So it's, I'm glad you came on. I appreciate it because I feel like there's just a lot. I mean, even like Mario was tweeting at me, Mario Gibney. I was just like, he's like, oh, what's going on with Nano? I was like, at that point, I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
This is like there was a CoinDesk article too that kind of blew up and a Yahoo Finance article that said like Nano is halted, which one, that is just flat out not true. The network was still operating and is still operating, hasn't stalled. And they said they were claiming that the whole network has like extremely long confirmation times, the network is down, but that's not true. There's specific services that were having serious issues, but the network was still operating. The network was still coming to consensus. Transactions were still being confirmed. Nothing halted. The node operators responded. I guess it's a difference in perspective, maybe. I'm like you, where I'm truly here for the technology in the sense that, or I'm following the technology very closely because I want to see if it can solve the big problem, in my mind, decentralized self-sovereign digital cash, right? Yeah. I expect issues. I expect improvements over time. And I don't want the protocol to stay static. And I'm aware that challenges will be faced and they should be expected. But at the same time, I'm trying not to get too deep into my own bubble, too deep into my own rabbit hole where I ignore legitimate issues.
Exactly.
But for this issue in particular, I don't see the big picture long-term issue with spam. I think it is a solvable problem. I think there's a lot of clever solutions, even from like traditional network engineering, traditional network stack solutions. There's a lot of work in the quality of space or quality of service and anti-spam arenas. And a lot of those concepts can be ported over to Nano in a pretty straightforward way, I think. It definitely seems like a solvable problem to me. And nothing that invalidates the idea, the big picture goal behind Nano.
Yeah, and if you're getting your information from CoinDesk, you know, I'm not going to speak for Patrick, but for the show, for Keyword Crypto, CoinDesk is trash.
Most, I appreciate the disclaimer.
Yeah, most of the writers there are just full-on Bitcoin shills, and that's fine. You know, like I don't have a problem with that. It's as long as you're aware that what you're reading is by somebody who hates everything that isn't Bitcoin. So just keep that in perspective. Like they're pretty open about it, and they have a track record of attacking people and making false statements. They did it with Crypto Finally recently, and they just refused to acknowledge that they flat out lied about her. And they flat out lied about Nano. Now, whether it's just that they're ignorant and they didn't do any research beforehand, or if they actually have a goal of trying to sabotage Nano, I don't know. I'm not in their head. I'm not gonna make a claim either way. But just realize that in general, that website's trash, and you take everything you read with a grain of salt. And that's sad because that's one of the bigger ones, and out there, and for it to be blatantly that bad and that unreliable is disheartening, because we need a publication where we can get actual quality information from, which is a
big challenge in the crypto space, right? Not just for Nano, but it's for the layman or more casual observers. Where do they go to get "quote unquote" unbiased news about cryptocurrency, right? You could maybe go to, like in this case, go to the Nano subreddit, but obviously you're going to get Nano focused and biased answers.
Yeah,
you go to CoinDesk or Bitcoin subreddits or anything, and you might get the complete opposite effect, right? How do you find the middle? And that's why I try to do my own research. I try to read articles when people link them to me. I try to actually go try the transactions for myself. I go look at the network monitors. I go look at the statistics. I see what's happening and try to figure out what's the root cause, what's the impact, so on and so forth. But to be honest, a lot of people can't do that. That requires some specialized time, specialized knowledge or time or research. And so I don't know how to solve that problem. I try to strike a nice middle ground. Obviously, I'm biased towards Nano, but I do try to incorporate legitimate criticism and try to be open to changing my views. And if there ever is some kind of like major consensus bug, double spending or things like that, I'll seriously reconsider where I'm putting my time, money, and energy and look for other alternatives. I'm not married to Nano. I'm not a maximalist. But I also, I'm trying to balance between what's a solvable problem and what's like a broken design.
Yeah.
And where I'm at right now, I feel like Bitcoin's in that broken design category, or maybe not broken. I could see how some people would just say it's a different design.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that, but it's not what I'm looking for. And so
a Model T isn't broken. It's just not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not a usable thing on a freeway with a 65 mile per hour speed limit. You can't drive a Model T on that freeway. So it's not broken, but it's just not well designed for today.
Exactly. And that's my philosophy. And that's why I'm still with Nano. No one has presented me a strong enough argument that shows that the core design is broken, or even if it was broken, that it can't be fixed or tweaked in some way to work. Yeah. Because the end goal is not to hit like a very specific protocol or code or set of rules. The end goal is to get working peer-to-peer digital cash. And maybe that does require a consensus to be changed. I'm open to that. That's one of the reasons I'm into Nano. And for some people, that idea, that concept is anathema, right? They want a static, ossified protocol that does not change. And that's fair. That's a viable desire, I guess, but it's not what I'm interested in. I think a lot of the Nano community, I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but I think a lot of Nano community, at least the enthusiast node operators, are in that same boat, right? We are here for peer-to-peer digital cash, and we will go to any solution that best solves that problem. It doesn't have to be Nano. If Nano proves itself wrong or to fail, then we'll go look for something else.
Yeah. But yeah. And I think that's what most Bitcoiners don't realize, or most people who are anti-Nano don't realize, is that a lot of the people here feel like they've found something and that's why they're so passionate about it. But they're also not like Kool-Aid drinkers, and they're not, you know, a lot of these people are just really technical people, and they're like, okay, well, you know, like that's what, so, you know, you said you don't know how to fix the information problem. Well, you're doing it. You're coming on, you're going on podcasts, you're coming on, I don't have that skill set to read all that information and to understand, like look at the code and understand it, and you do. And so that's why, like the way I combat the misinformation of CoinDesk is to have people like you on who are thoughtful and aren't just complete maximalists of, you know, of a certain camp and are willing to think outside the box. Like, that's why I have Mario come on for Bitcoin. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. I appreciate that, and I understand that, but I also worry that people put me on a pedestal as some kind of like infallible technical expert, and that everything I say must be right, when really I want people to ask the questions and just go try it for yourself. Do your own research and come to your own conclusion, which easier said than done, but yeah, it's a struggle. There's like, I know there has to be a middle state and in between, and I try to do my best to kind of serve in that role, but I don't want to tell people, go buy Nano, go consider Nano the best cryptocurrency of all time, if you don't understand the vision or the concepts or what's really going on. I want people to be into Nano because they see where it's going. They see the vision. They understand, at least at a high level, the concepts, and they're able to make that determination for themselves of, oh, is this really a serious long-term issue, or is this a growing pain kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. And that's the thing. This is like, and if you're listening, I didn't bring on Patrick to tell you definitively what happened. I brought on Patrick because he's a competent, intelligent person who looks at both sides and will give his honest opinion about something, you know? And because, I mean, you can claim that you would leave if something better came along if Nano crashed, but we don't know that until it actually happens. You could be secretly a total Nano shill, total Nano maxi, maximalist, total Nano Kool-Aid person, cult, you know, cult. But, you know, so far you haven't presented yourself that way. You haven't, you've been open about bugs. You've been open about this. You've been open about what actually happened, about stuff shutting down. And then you've given your thoughtful response to it. And I think people who listen to this podcast appreciate that and want people who are thoughtful about what's right, you know, what's going well with a project, and also what's not going well with a project. You know, the bugs that are going on, like with Ethereum, like with Matic, like with rollups, like with sidechains, like, you know, so I try to bring on people who are going to talk about the dangers involved in, you know, new technology, trying new things. This is still people, it drives me crazy because Bitcoiners are like, well, how's, you know, Bitcoin's up how much percent in after 12 years? And I was like, okay, well, Nano's only been around for half that long, not even half that long. So trying to compare, you know, talk to me in 6 years when they've both been around, you know, the same amount of time, or, you know, not the same amount of time, but like, you know, the 4 year mark, the 6 year mark, the 10 year mark, and then start comparing those things. But even that's not really a good enough a comparison, because Bitcoin came out and there was zero people involved in crypto at that point, because that was the first crypto that actually worked.
And no competition too, right?
Yeah, and no competition. And Nano is coming out, you know, on the coattails of the success of Bitcoin, fixing some issues. And so it has a lot of advantages that Bitcoin didn't have. And I'm totally willing to be open about that. Same with Ethereum. Ethereum is riding on the coattails of Bitcoin. If Bitcoin wasn't successful in working, Ethereum wouldn't get the traction that it already has. So it's like, we have to put things in perspective. And I like that you are open about that kind of stuff with Nano. And that's the reason why I like having you on and talking with you about this kind of stuff. So I know you have a very short amount of time. We just did this really fast. Do you have anything else you want to get off your chest before we end it?
So sometimes I struggle with, so I am here because at my core, I believe that the problem of decentralized, censorship-resistant, non-inflationary digital cash is a solvable and useful problem. And so I started with Bitcoin for that reason. And the reason I switched is because I did not feel like my concerns were being addressed. It's not necessarily that I think Bitcoin is trash per se. I do see that it provides some value and it is useful to some people. And it has proven itself through time and being a hardened asset, and it has some value there. But at my core, I'm still searching for that peer-to-peer digital cash. And so that's what leads me down the path towards projects like Nano. And you mentioned, like, would I actually leave if like consensus was broken on Nano? To be honest, I still might not leave because the idea I'm chasing is that peer-to-peer digital cash. And if the problem is a solvable problem, I might stick around. If someone presents a better solution, I might switch at that point. But even if Nano had some kind of catastrophic 0 day, but there's still the idea and there's still the potential, I might stick around. And I know that makes me maybe sound like a fanatic or enthusiast or stuck in a bubble, and maybe I am, but I think it's because I so strongly believe in the idea that Nano is chasing. It's not that I believe in Nano necessarily, but the idea that Nano so far is still targeting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and you know, when I had Colin on, I flat out said, like, look, non-inflationary currency is a gamble. It's like, you know, it's a test. It's never been proven to work.
I agree.
And he was like, yeah. And I said, okay, great. Thank you. So, because a lot of people were like, oh, you know, this, it's going to work. There's no way of knowing it's going to work. It's never worked in the history of mankind. This is all a test. That's the reason why I like the idea of Banano as a kind of a joke, because that's taken the opposite approach of an inflationary version of Nano. And I like the idea of having one of each and seeing which one actually works better than the other.
I'm right there with you. I see all of cryptocurrency still, even Bitcoin, as a big experiment that could still fail. Maybe it hasn't yet, and maybe your definition of success is different than mine, because I know some people consider like a high price, a high market cap as the definition of success.
Yeah. But
that's not my definition of success.
No, and not at all.
I think that crypto is even Bitcoin is a highly risky, highly volatile space, and things could go drastically wrong. If you are in this space buying random things and not doing your research and not looking at the technical fundamentals for yourself, then you're playing a dangerous game. You might get lucky. The price might increase. You might come out ahead temporarily, or maybe for years, or maybe you never fail. I mean, even Ponzi schemes operate that way.
Yeah.
But to me, at its core, cryptocurrency is a very risky experiment that is trying to solve a problem that might not be solvable. I hope it is. I think it is. But maybe this is all BS and it's never going to work. But
it's funny because
I don't know. It's just a difference of philosophy.
Yeah. Well, I just interviewed Bennett Tomlin again, and we were talking about DAI and how the majority, like at any given time, 50% of DAI is being upheld by USDC and Tether, which could both be frozen at any given time and force DAI to collapse. And since the majority of cryptocurrency in general is being traded against these stable coins that are completely centralized and can be censored by the government, the entire market cap could completely collapse in one day if a nation state decided to somehow freeze those two. That's the vast majority of trading. And then DAI would collapse on top of that because those two froze. So it's this idea of, like, you know, anything like that can happen at any given time. We've never had a nation state, a large nation state, openly attack cryptocurrency. So it is a test. So if you're listening, don't invest any more money than you can absolutely afford to lose tomorrow. If you put in money and then the next day I said, hey, it's gone, you lost it all, you need to be able to say, okay, cool, and move on with your life. If you're putting more than that in, like, just don't, because if you need that money,
I could not agree more strongly with that.
It could be gone tomorrow. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's always fun talking to you. And, you know, when, yeah, when this is all over, next time I'm in Austin, we'll have to meet up for a beer or something like that, or maybe have a nano meetup or something like
for
that.
For sure. Most definitely.
Sweet. Well, you know, thanks again for doing what you do. Thanks again for talking to a bunch of people and getting the information out there that as you see it, you know, because like you said, it may not be perfect, but you're doing your best. And I appreciate you. And I know the community really appreciates all the hard work you do. And keep it up.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
All right, everybody. Talk to you next time. Thanks.